The new Wegovy pill is now available through Weight Watchers. Powerful GLP-1 results in a simple pill at the lowest price available. And with Weight Watchers, you can get doctor support and personalized nutrition programs. See if you qualify at weightwatchers.com. Ad not reviewed or approved by Novo Nordisk.
Rehoming your dog is not always the worst case scenario. Rehoming your dog in some cases could be the best case scenario for you and your family and your dog. The quality of life for your dog to live in another environment that's more suitable and more safe for them is much better than hanging on to a dog that doesn't fit your lifestyle and is dangerous to you and your family because of the dog's personality or genetics. So most people think, oh, if I get rid of a dog or if I rehome my dog or even if I give my dog back to the breeder that you're bad and you couldn't handle the dog and all these things. No, actually, you're advocating for the dog to say, you know what? What's going on, everybody? Welcome to my second YouTube channel and the No Bad Dogs podcast. If you guys are watching this on YouTube, make sure you subscribe to my second YouTube channel. We're going to be posting tons of different stuff on here, but for right now, we're posting our full-length podcast with all my amazing guests, and this is a uncut, unfiltered version, backwards hat, unbranded hoodie, some probably room temperature matcha, but today I want to talk about something that I've never done before with a dog training client that was in desperate need that I felt like I wanted to share with you guys because I think it's a very, very valuable lesson. It's a very valuable piece of information. And so I had a consult yesterday. You can work with me online. I work with a bunch of people online every day, basically just consulting with them, coaching them, helping them, answering questions, etc. And they have a dog that is developing resource guarding and it's getting pretty bad. And the dog has bitten the other dogs. So they have three dogs altogether and they have two senior dogs, two very senior dogs, like 12 years old senior. And so unedited that I'm just going to put on chapstick midway through this. So, but the dog was attacking the other dogs because of resource guarding. And so they had a tough decision to make. And basically they came to me and they said, hey, how much money do we have to spend to make this go away? And I was honest with them and I said, you can't make this go away. And the reason why is because resource guarding, just to define really quick, that's when a dog will try to attack, at the very least growl, lift their lip up, show their teeth. But in most cases, the dog will attack another dog or even sometimes people if the dog gets near their resource, which could be a bone, it could be a stuffed animal, it could be, in this case, food. And so, no edits. The dog was attacking the older dogs. And so, again, they wanted me to kind of give them the advice on getting rid of it. And I said, look, resource guarding, from what I have seen, and you guys have seen me work with resource guarding plenty of times on my YouTube channel, as well as talk about it in my podcast, a lot of times it's genetic, which means the dog, it's baked into the dog. They were born with it. Sometimes it develops over maturity. Other times it's there right when they're puppies. But to be honest with you guys, and I was honest with them, which is what made me go down this really uncomfortable conversation with them. For them, maybe, I don't know, it wasn't uncomfortable for me, but it was something I've never done before. And so I was telling them, look, you could work on training, you can work on desensitization, you can work on correcting the behavior. But the reality is your other two dogs who are in their golden years, you know, they have, I don't know, 6 months to 2 years left of life, possibly less, possibly more. And I was like, do you want to put your older dogs through this? Because this is something with the dog, the aggressor, that's not going to go away. We are going to be managing this behavior likely for the rest of the dog's life. And so this is the important, there's two important things about this, guys. That's, in my opinion, some of the most valuable stuff, how I approach dog training, no matter what the case is. I look at in my head a risk and reward assessment sheet, basically. So in my head, I go through this with the dog owners out loud. I say, okay, Let's talk about the risk. The risk is we keep the aggressor, who is 1 year old big giant dog, around with the 11 and 12 year old two dogs. And we work on desensitizing resource guarding, correcting resource guarding, muzzle conditioning the dog, making things more manageable, slightly more predictable. The one thing about this particular case is it was very inconsistent, which makes any type of dog behavioral work very challenging. When you have inconsistent behaviors, it's extremely hard to deal with because you never know when it's going to happen. You don't really know the triggers for sure. It's like driving your car and every 50 to 100 miles, you hear this really weird noise and then it goes away for 3 days and then comes back. How are you supposed to explain that, right? It's very inconsistent. You don't know where it's coming from and you don't know why it's happening. So when you have a dog that is developing resource guarding and it's inconsistent, it makes it very dangerous and frustrating to work with because you don't know when it's going to happen. And so as we were working through this risk and risk over a reward assessment, or that's just a good way to put it, right? Like what's the ROI here? And so the risk, again, was that the dog does lash out to the older dogs, potentially injuring them. And obviously, just like with people, when you injure a senior dog, antibiotics, surgery potentially, even just the amount of stress. So here's all that. Here's all the risk factors. Your older dogs in their senior years, in their last couple of years here with you, live a very stressed life. You are stressed as dog owners. So as the owners are working through these situations, their anxiety is through the roof. And then the other dog too. So one caveat here is the dog didn't like doing what he was doing. He just couldn't help it. So after he did it, he would go and hide. He would go into a closet. And it's kind of like the wolfman turning into wolfman. They can't really help it, right? And so the dog doesn't want to do it, and which really leads me to like the baked-in genetic type of resource guarding, where the dog knows it's wrong. The dog doesn't want to do it, but they just have to. That is baked in genetics that you can't get rid of. We see it all the time in a lot of other drives with dogs. And so there's all the risks, right? You're stressed, the aggressor is stressed, and your older dogs are stressed the entire time. And what I was explaining to them is I said, look, even if you are successful and you get your dog out and they're commingling and they're coexisting and everything is fine, you don't know when the trigger is going to happen. You don't know if he's going to resource guard you, resource guard the couch, resource guard the food, the water dish. And so I was telling them, you're going to be stressed the whole time, even if it is successful. So it's really a lose-lose. Think about it. You have a dog that has a history of attacking the other dogs. The other dogs are senior, and so you don't want anything to happen. So your heart's going to be in your throat every time that they're around. You're going to be, oh God, they're walking next to you. Okay. Oh God, they're going to, okay. Right. It's just going to be constant. And that's the reality of owning a dog that has a history of this, because once you see it, you know, and let me know in the comments if you guys have dealt with something like this, it's very violent and it could be very traumatic for everybody in the household. And, you know, working with reactive dogs my entire life, I definitely have some sort of PTSD just by hearing certain things. Like if a chair moves, like a wooden chair moves on a floor just right, it sounds like a really blood-curdling growl and my heart spikes immediately. It happens all the time. Because I work with a lot of dogs that try to come after me to try to bite me. So when I hear that instinctually, my heart just immediately jumps. I'm like, oh, okay, it's okay. Like, I definitely deal with that myself. And so I know when the owners have watched their aggressor dog, their young dog, attack the older dogs, they got to be feeling the same thing. And so we start talking about, you know, the options, right? So kind of closing out the risk-reward assessment. The risk is all that stress. And there's still potential of the aggressor to go after them. And now you're kind of in a deeper hole because your senior dogs who are putting their trust into you to advocate for them, to keep them safe, is now dwindling. So again, like the last couple of years of these dogs' life is anxious, walking on eggshells, and potentially like ruining the trust in relationship with you because you're letting this dog do these things and you know about it. So it's just not a good situation, right? Like no matter how you cut it, it's not a good situation. And so going over to the reward, it was, okay, again, resource guarding isn't going to be one of those things that the dog never does again because it's like it's genetic, right? So think about it like this. Let's say we have, you know, a lab that really loves a ball or a shepherd that really loves a ball, right? So that dog chasing that ball and playing fetch is a genetic disposition that most dogs have. It's called prey drive. They like chasing, they bring it back. It chases again, it bring it back. It runs again, they bring it back. That's genetics, right? So let's say this. Let's say, okay, this dog is doing what he likes to do, he or she likes to do, chase the ball. And what if we say one time, like, okay, let's stop the chasing of the ball forever for whatever reason. That is going to be lifetime suppression. And in dog training, suppression, for some reason, drives me nuts. There's so many dog trainers who talk about suppression like it's this awful thing. Well, if you are training a dog and you put a leash on a dog, if you put a fence in a backyard, you are suppressing your dog. I hate to break it to you, trainers who are throwing around suppression like it's this some nasty word and nobody in the dog training space will be doing it. Well, you don't know what you're talking about. Suppression by definition is quite literally, especially towards animals, is to make a dog do something they don't want to do. So if you put a leash on a dog and they want to go this way and you say, no, you can't, there's a car, you're suppressing your dog. Now, for most people out there who are normal thinkers, critical thinkers, realistic thinkers.
You're on a GLP-1. Your appetite is changing, your cravings quiet down, and food noise is finally fading. But now you're wondering, how do I manage my side effects? What do I eat to stay strong? How do I break through a plateau? Because reaching your weight loss goals can take more than meds. That's where Weight Watchers Med Plus comes in. The support designed to help you navigate what comes next. With trusted experts who guide you, food plans that work with your body, support to help manage side effects, plus access to GLP-1 medication. Weight Watchers Med Plus is designed to help you lose more weight. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com. All medical services are provided through our affiliated medical group, Weight Watchers Clinic. Medications require eligibility and prescription. Individual results may vary. See site for more details.
We all understand that suppression is part of every single day life. We stop at a stop sign even though we're late and we don't want to, but we do it because it's safe and that's the law. Suppression is something that we deal with probably by the minute, right? So do dogs and so does training. So anybody out there who's listening and see other people on TikTok and other social media talking about, oh, that person uses suppression. Guess what? So do you. Everybody uses suppression. Okay, off my soapbox. So let's say the dog that the lab that loves the ball, we say all of a sudden, hey, you can't go chase the ball. Does the dog want to do it or will the dog have the urge to do it? Absolutely. But if we manage it, could we manage it? Can we stop it? Can we put a leash on the dog? Can we put a knee collar on the dog? Can we make sure the dog doesn't chase the ball? Yes. But it's going to be a lifetime worth of management to make sure that the dog doesn't chase whatever they want to chase. So hopefully that example lands with you guys and makes sense. So it's the same thing with the resource guarding. I was saying there's a good chance we can't get rid of the resource guarding because it is baked into the dog's DNA. And even if we did work on it, right? So even if we went to the reward side and say, okay, what is the reward of this? What's the ROI of this? If we worked on it, the only way we'd really be able to work on it in a context that is realistic is if we used your other dogs. So again, we kind of flop back to, we have to use the other dogs to really work on desensitizing, correcting, training, behavior modification, all that stuff. And still at the end of the day, like the lab that wants to chase the ball, we're really just suppressing stuff because the dog's genetics say I need to have resource guarding. And the dog knows it's wrong. They just can't help it. So anytime I'm working with any dog, especially behavioral cases, I should say, it's really only applicable to behavioral cases. Basic obedience, it's not applicable. So dog trainers and dog owners, you can use this, like you look at an assessment, you go, okay, what's the risk of going through this type of training? And what's the reward? And a lot of times, especially in this case, it was like this. There's really no rewards here because even if we had a couple good weeks, and you let your guard down and the aggressor attacked one of the other dogs and the other dog had to go into surgery. And, you know, now they're living the last 6 months on antibiotics and recovering from an injury. It's going to be awful. So I talked about the options that they have. So the first option is to crate and rotate and play zookeeper for the rest of your life, which is what a lot of dog owners do. A lot of dog owners have to do that, meaning we have two dogs in the house that don't get along, and so we're just rotating them through our lifestyle. There's many people who have to do that. If you have working dogs, this is your life. Working dogs, this is the only life they know. They're not out. They're only in the crate or the kennel. And when they're out and they're working, and then they're back in. That's just the life, right? Or, you know, the other option, and really I kind of went through two different options. So the first one was management, you know. Well, I guess I'll give you the second one. So there's three. And the other one was desensitizing the dog, the aggressor, to hopefully get better, to reduce the resource guarding. But still, the owners are still going to be nervous, and the other dogs are still going to be nervous. So even if the aggressor doesn't react, it's still creating the same situation for everybody in the environment. Everyone's nervous. And to live your life like that is not very fun, and it's not really sustainable. It's just your nervous system is constantly like on edge, and it's not a good idea. So then the realistic option was rehoming the dog. And this is a conversation. So there's two parts to this that's kind of profound for me. The first part is talking about this. I don't know if I've ever talked about this in this way, but rehoming your dog is not always the worst case scenario. Rehoming your dog in some cases could be the best case scenario for you and your family and your dog. The quality of life for your dog to live in another environment that's more suitable and more safe for them is much better than hanging on to a dog that doesn't fit your lifestyle and is dangerous to you and your family because of the dog's personality or genetics. So most people think, oh, if I get rid of a dog, or if I rehome my dog, or even if I give my dog back to the breeder, that you're bad and you couldn't handle the dog and all these things. No, actually, you're advocating for the dog to say, you know what? If I keep this dog who doesn't, you know, for an example, get along with the other dogs in my house and make our entire life stress, our marriage is stress, my other dogs are stress, the whole thing is stressful. But if I rehome this dog to another home that doesn't have other dogs, the dog will live a happier life. The better quality of life for everybody increases. So the ROI on that is gigantic. And I feel so many people are so hard on themselves and stigmatized. If you get rid of a dog, you're a failure. And in this case, that is not the truth whatsoever. They have a dog who has a natural baked-in genetic resource guarding issue that the dog can't shake. The dog knows it's wrong. The dog is sweet as pie outside of this. And so the owners are stressed. The older two senior dogs are stressed. And the aggressor is stressed because he doesn't want to do it. So to hang on to this dog and keep this dog in the home is actually selfish and doing the wrong thing, right? Because of what so many people have stigmatized as if you get rid of a dog, you're the worst. And that's not the case at all, right? If you get rid of a dog to make the dog's life better, you're doing a better thing. And so I'm just here to tell you, as somebody who has owned and loved dogs for over 30 years and has been a professional behavioral expert for over a decade, getting rid of your dog to better suit the dog's life and give the dog a better quality of life is the right thing to do in that circumstance. And you are not a bad dog owner. And it's not that you couldn't handle the dog, or it's just, this isn't the right fit for me, period. Right? Like if I adopted a dog tomorrow and brought it into my home thinking, oh, my kids and my family and my other dogs, all this is going to be great. That dog came into my home and 3 months later, the dog started attacking all my other dogs. Why would I live for the next 7 to 10 years through stress and agony just so people on the internet, or just so your neighbors, or just so your conscience doesn't feel bad? And I'm here to tell you, it is okay to rehome your dog if your quality of life for the dog and everybody that lives with you is going to the crapshoot. There's nothing wrong with that. And secondly, when I was explaining this to them, they were really disappointed. And I can hear in their voice, I'm in the people business. I'm not in the dog business. I have a passion for helping people, but I just have a master's in dogs, if you will. Like that's what I'm naturally gifted at, is dogs. But I love helping people. So I can hear in their tone of voice that they weren't happy with what I was telling them. And so for the first time in my career, I just simply said, can I ask you this? What would you have liked to hear? And it wasn't from a place of I want to make you happy as a client. I was just curious, what were you hoping to hear? And first of all, they said, and they were great. First of all, they said, look, we hired you to consult to give us the answer we needed to hear, not what we want to hear. So first of all, thank you for being truthful. I said, sure. And they said, but honestly, we were hoping that you were going to tell us something that we didn't think of. And so that was the first time in my career that I actually extended this olive branch because I could hear the frustration and sadness and disappointment in their eyes. Not because of me, but because of what I said. And so I just was like, what's the deal? What did you expect? And they just said, we're hoping something else, right? And I get that. And they're doing the right thing. You know, you have a situation at home, you find a guy like me that eats, sleeps, and breathes reactive dogs, and you go, maybe this guy has a different option. But the reality is when you're dealing with something so baked in, it's very difficult to remove. And in most cases, you can't. You have to manage it and suppress it. The dog that wants to chase the ball, they're obsessed with balls. Why are they obsessed with balls? Because they're a working line shepherd or a working line, whatever, they're a dog. So throughout our whole life, you call a trainer and say, I want my dog to stop chasing balls. I'm like, I can get your dog to stop chasing balls, but I'm not going to be able to stop your dog from wanting to chase the ball. And that's the difference between reality and fairy tale, right? And I get that you would hire a dog trainer, especially a behavioral expert like me, to get rid of the thing that is causing so much stress in your life. And so this was a profound session for me online. And I wanted to share it with you guys because I think it's helpful for people to hear it. Now, it's gospel, right? It's like, it's subjective. Like, this is just my professional opinion. Out of all the dogs, you know, I'm a human being. I'm a father. I'm a husband. I'm a dog owner. I'm a business owner. And that's just where I'm at, you know? So, I don't know if everybody would agree with this, but to me, it's just like, I'm using my critical thinking skills to like go through like every possible situation. And that's what I gave him. I said, you could keep your dog, but you're going to have to rotate in order for the quality of life for all the dogs to be not stressful for the rest of their lives. And they're like, well, that's going to make us stressful. I know. So I just think it's important for people to understand some of these things that go on behind the scenes. And I think this is invaluable to a lot of people out there, especially dog trainers, to have that conversation. You don't really know how to say it, or you don't know what to say, or you don't know if it's okay to say to get rid of your dog, it's the better option. And, you know, again, I'm just a normal guy. You know, I'm not, you know, the prophet. I've watched The Prophet on Netflix, which is crazy documentary, by the way. Nuts. Anyway, you guys can listen to all my podcasts. Listen to my Substack. Basically, when I go on dog walks, I have all these ideas pop up into my head. And it's like the only time in my life that I can't just, you know, whip out a camera and talk about it. Especially when I'm walking with my dogs, because you might think like, oh, get your cell phone. I just record audio voice notes and I send it into my Substack. You guys can check that out in the link below. But anyway, guys, thanks for listening to the No Bad Dogs podcast. Thank you so much for watching this on my second YouTube channel. Make sure you guys subscribe to my second YouTube channel, because we're going to be not collaborating with the Tom Davis Dog Training channel any much longer. So you guys, if you don't subscribe, you're going to miss it. Thank you guys so much for listening and watching. And I will talk to you on the next one. Peace. Also, really quick, guys, this episode is brought to you by my friends over at We Feed Raw. If you guys want to hop on the bandwagon and try a fresh raw diet delivered straight to your door, you guys can click the link below and save 50% off your very first order right now because you're listening to the No Bad Dogs podcast. Enjoy.